This is Audible.
Audible presents this brilliance audio production of
Face the Fire by Nora Roberts. To lovers, old and new. O love, O fire, once he drew with one long kiss my whole soul through my lips, as sunlight drinketh dew. Alfred Lord Tennyson. Prologue. Three Sisters Island, September, 1702. Her heart was broken. The jagged shards of it stabbed at her soul until each hour, each moment of what her life had become was a misery. Even her children, those she had carried in her body, those she carried for her lost sisters, were no comfort. Nor was she, to her great shame, any comfort to them. She had left them, even as their father had left them. Her husband, her lover, her heart, had returned to the sea, and the parts of her that were hope and love and magic had died that day. Even now he would not remember the years they'd had together, the joy of them. He would not remember her or their sons, their daughters, the life they'd made on the island. Such was his nature. Such was her fate. And her sisters, she thought as she stood on the cliff she loved, above a sea that boiled and bucked. They, too, had been fated to love and to lose. The one who was heir had loved a handsome face and kind words that had disguised a beast who had shed her blood. He had murdered her for what she was, and she had not used her power to stop him. And so the one who was earth had raged and grieved and built her hatred stone by stone until it had become a wall that no one could breach. She had used her power for vengeance, forsaken her craft, and embraced the dark. Now the dark closed in, and she who was fire was alone with her pain. She could fight it no longer, could find no purpose for her own life. The dark whispered to her in the night, its sly voice full of lies. Even knowing them for what they were, she was tempted by them. Her circle was broken, and she could not, would not, withstand alone. She felt it. Creeping closer now, sliding along the ground in a filthy fog. It hungered. Her death would feed it, and still she could not face life. She lifted her arms so the flame of her hair snapped in the wind that she called up with a breath. She had such powers left in her, and the sea howled in response. The ground beneath her shuddered. Air and earth and fire, and the water that had given her great love then had stolen it away again. This last time they were hers to command again. Her children would be safe, she had seen to that. Their nurse would tend them, teach them, and the gift, the brightness, would be passed down. The darkness licked along her skin, cold, cold kisses. She teetered on the edge, will straining against will as the storm within her, and the storm she'd conjured, raged. This island, she thought, that she and her sisters had conjured for safety from the ravages of those who would hunt and kill them, would be lost. All would be lost.
"You are alone,"
the darkness murmured.
"You are in pain. End the loneliness. End the pain."
And so she would, but she would not forsake her children or the children that came from them. Power was still in her, and the strength and wit to wield it. 100 years times three, this Isle of the Sisters is safe from thee. From her reaching fingers, light whipped, spun, a circle in a circle. My children your hand cannot reach. They will live and learn and teach. And when my spell comes undone, three more will rise to form the one. A circle of sisters, joined in power to stand and face the darkest hour. Courage and trust, justice with mercy, love without boundaries are the lessons three. They must, by free will, join to face their destiny. If this they fail, one, two, or three, this island will sink into the sea. But if they turn back the dark, this place will never bear your mark. This spell is the last cast by me. As I will, so mote it be. The darkness snatched at her as she leaped, but could not reach her. As she plunged toward the sea, she hurled her power around the island where her children slept, like a silver net. 1. Three Sisters Island, May 2002. It had been more than 10 years since he'd stood on the island, over a decade since he'd seen, except in his mind, the wedges of forest, the scatter of houses, the curve of beach and cove, and the drama of the cliffs where the stone house stood beside the white lance of the island lighthouse. He shouldn't have been so surprised by the pull and tug, or by the sheer simplicity of pleasure. Sam Logan was rarely surprised, but the delight in seeing what had changed and what hadn't surprised him by its depth. He'd come home, and hadn't realized, not completely, what that meant to him until he'd gotten there. He parked near the ferry dock because he wanted to walk, to smell the salty spring air, to hear the voices from the boats, to see the life flowing along on the little bump of land off the coast of Massachusetts. And perhaps, he admitted, because he wanted a little more time to prepare himself before seeing the woman he'd come back for. He didn't expect a warm welcome. The fact was, he didn't know what to expect from Mia. Once he had. He'd known every expression on her face, every inflection of her voice. Once she would have been standing on the dock to meet him, her glorious red hair flying, her smoky eyes alight with pleasure and promise. He'd have heard her laugh as she raced into his arms. Those days were over, he thought, as he climbed the road toward High Street and the stretch of pretty shops and offices. He'd ended them and had exiled himself deliberately, from the island and from Mia. Now he was deliberately ending that exile. In the time between, the girl he'd left behind had become a woman, a businesswoman, he thought, with a half laugh. No surprise there. Mia had always had a head for business and a view for profit. He intended to use that, if need be, to wheedle his way back into her good graces. Sam didn't mind wheedling, as long as he won. He turned on High Street and paused to take a long look at the Magic Inn. The Gothic stone building was the island's only hotel, and it belonged to him. He had some ideas that he intended to implement there, now that his father had finally released the reins. But business would wait, for once, until the personal was dealt with. He continued walking, pleased to see that while traffic was light, it was steady. Business on the island, he decided, was as good as reported. He had a long stride, and it ate up the sidewalk quickly. He was a tall man, nearly 3 inches over 6 feet, with a rangy, disciplined build more accustomed in the last years to tailored suits than the black jeans he wore today. The long, dark coat he wore against the brisk breeze of early May billowed behind him as he walked. His hair was black as well, and, wind-blown now from the ferry ride from the mainland, swept past his collar. His face was lean, the long bones of his cheeks well-defined. The planes and angles were softened somewhat by a full and sculpted mouth, and with those black wings of hair flying back, presented a dramatic picture. His eyes were alert as they scanned what had been and would be again his home. Somewhere between blue and green, they were the color of the sea that surrounded the house, framed by dark lashes and brows. He used his looks when it suited him, just as he used charm or ruthlessness. Whatever tools came to hand were employed to reach his goal. He'd already accepted that it would take everything at his disposal to win Mia Devlin. From across the street, he studied Cafe Book. He should have known Mia would have taken what had been a neglected building and turned it into something lovely, elegant, and productive. The front window held a display of books and potted spring flowers scattered around a lawn chair. Two of her deepest loves, he mused, books and flowers. She'd used them both in a way that suggested it was time to take a break from the yard work, sit down, and enjoy the fruits of the labor with a ride in a story. Even as he watched, a couple of tourists, he hadn't been away so long he couldn't tell tourists from islanders, walked into the bookstore. He stood where he was, hands in his pockets, until he realized he was procrastinating. There was little more turbulent than Mia Devlin in full temper. He expected her to lash out at him in blistering fury the minute she laid eyes on him again, and who could blame her? Then again, he thought with a grin, There was little more arousing than Mia Devlin in full temper. It would be entertaining to strike swords with her again, just as it would be satisfying to soothe that temper away. He crossed the street and opened the door to Cafe Book. Lulu was behind the counter. He'd have recognized her anywhere, the tiny woman with a gnome's face almost swallowed up by silver-framed glasses had essentially raised Mia. The Devlins had been more interested in each other and traveling than in their daughter, and Lulu, the former flower child, had been hired to tend her. Because Lulu was ringing up a customer's purchases, he had a moment to look around the store. The ceiling was pricked with lights for a starry effect and made the prospect of browsing through the books a festive one. A cozy seating area was arranged in front of a fireplace with a hearth, scrubbed and polished, used as a haven for more spring flowers. The scent of them sweetened the air, as did the pipes and flutes playing softly on the speaker system. Glossy blue shelves held books, an impressive array, he reflected as he wandered through, and as eclectic as he would have expected of the proprietor. No one would ever accuse Mia of having a one-track mind. His lips quirked as he saw that other shelves held ritual candles, tarot cards, runes, statues of fairies, wizards, dragons. An attractive arrangement of another of Mia's interests, he thought. He'd have expected nothing else there, either. He plucked a tumbling stone of rose quartz from a bowl, rubbed it between his fingers for luck. Though he knew better, before he could replace it, he felt a blast of frigid air. Smiling easily, he turned to face Lulu. Always knew you'd come back. Bad pennies always turn up. This was his first barrier, the dragon at the gate.
Hello, Lou.
Don't you hello Lou me, Sam Logan, she sniffed, skimmed her gaze over him, sniffed a second time. You buying that? Or do I call the sheriff and have you hauled in for shoplifting?
He laid the stone back in the bowl.
How is Zack?
Ask him yourself. I don't have time to waste on you.
Though he had her by a foot in height, she stepped forward, jabbed her finger at him, and made him feel 12 years old again.
What the hell do you want?
To see home. To see Mia.
Why don't you do everybody a favor and go back to where you've been gallivanting these past years? New York City, Paris, ooh la la. We've all done fine without you taking up space on the sisters.
Apparently.
He gave the store another casual look. He wasn't offended. A dragon in his mind was meant to be devoted to its princess. In his memory, Lulu had always been up to the job.
Nice place. I hear the cafe's particularly good, and that Zack's new wife runs it.
Your hearing's just fine. So listen up. Go on and get.
Not offended, no, but his eyes turned edgy, the green in them deepening.
I came to see Mia.
She's busy. I'll tell her you stop by.
No, you won't,
he said quietly.
But she'll know, in any case.
Even as he spoke, he heard the sound of heels on wood. It could have been a dozen women descending the curving steps in high heels, but he knew. As his heart stumbled in his chest, he stepped around the bookshelves and saw her just as she made the last turn. And the look, that one look at her, sliced him into a thousand pieces. The princess, he thought, had become the queen. She'd always been the most beautiful creature he'd ever seen. The transition from girl to woman had only added polished layers to that beauty. Her hair was as he remembered it, a long tumble of flaming curls around a face of rose and cream. That skin, he remembered, was as soft as dew. Her nose was small and straight, her mouth wide and full, and he remembered, perfectly remembered, the texture and flavor. Her eyes were smoke gray, almond-shaped, and watched him now with a studied coolness. She smiled, and that, too, was cool as she walked toward him. Her dress, a dull gold, clung to her curves, showed off long, long legs. The heels she wore were the same tone and made her look like something glowing with heat, but he felt no warmth from her as she arched a brow and looked at him in turn.
"Well, it's Sam Logan, isn't it? Welcome back."
Her voice was deeper, just a few degrees deeper than it had been once upon a time, sultrier, smokier, silkier.
It seemed to wind its way into his belly even as he puzzled over her polite smile and detached welcome.
Thanks.
Deliberately he matched her tone.
It's good to be back. You look amazing.
We do what we can.
She tossed back her hair. There were citron stones at her ears. The details of her, down to the rings on her fingers, the subtle scent that surrounded her, etched themselves into his mind. For an instant he tried to read hers, but found the language foreign and frustrating.
I like your bookstore,
he said, careful to keep his voice casual,
or what I've seen of it.
Well, we'll have to give you the grand tour. Lulu, you have customers.
I know what I've got,
Lulu muttered.
It's a work day, isn't it? You don't have time to go showing this one around the place.
Lulu?
Mia merely angled her head, a quiet warning.
I've always got a few minutes for an old friend. Come upstairs, Sam. See the cafe.
She started back up, her hand trailing along the rail.
You may have heard that a mutual friend of ours, Zach Todd, was married last winter. Nell's not only a close friend of mine, but she's a spectacular cook as well.
Sam paused at the top of the stairs. It annoyed him that he had to get his bearings, seek his balance. The scent of her was turning him inside out. The second floor was just as welcoming as the first, with the added enticement of a bustling cafe on one end and all the wonderful aromas of spices, coffee, rich chocolate that wafted from it. The display glass sparkled in front of a dazzling selection of baked goods and salads. Fragrant smoke streamed from an enormous kettle where even now a pretty blonde ladled out soup for a waiting customer. Windows on the far wall let in glimpses of the sea.
It's terrific.
That, at least, he could say without qualification.
Just terrific, Mia. You must be very proud of what you've done here.
Why wouldn't I be?
There was a bite, a quick, nasty nip in the tone that had him looking back at her. But she only smiled again, gestured with an elegant hand that sparkled with rings.
Hungry?
More than I'd counted on.
A glimpse of that bite snapped for an instant in those smoke-gray depths before she turned and led the way to the counter.
Nell, I have a man with an appetite.
Then he's come to the right place.
Nell grinned, her dimples fluttering, her blue eyes friendly when they met Sam's.
Our soup of the day is chicken curry. Special salad is shrimp Diablo, and the sandwich of the day is grilled pork and tomato on olive loaf, plus our regular fare,
she added, tapping the counter menu,
with our vegetarian offerings.
Zach's wife, Sam thought. It was one thing to realize that his oldest friend had taken the plunge, and another to see the reason why. It gave him yet one more jolt.
Quite a selection.
We like to think so.
You can't make a bad choice when Nell's prepared it,
Mia told him.
I'll just leave you in her capable hands for the moment. I do have work. Oh, Nell, I should have introduced you. This is an old friend of Zach's, Sam Logan. Enjoy your lunch, she said, then walked away.
Sam watched surprise race over Nell's pretty face, then every bit of warmth drain away.
What can I get you?
Just coffee for now. Black. How's Zach?
He's very well, thank you.
Sam drummed his fingers on his thigh. Another guard at the gate, he thought, and no less formidable than the dragon for all the soft looks.
And Ripley? I heard she got married just last month.
She's very well and very happy.
Nell's mouth formed a firm, unwelcoming line as she set his coffee in a to-go cup on the counter.
No charge. I'm sure Mia doesn't want or need your money. They serve a very nice lunch at the Magic Inn, as I'm sure you know.
Yes, I know.
A pretty kitten, and very sharp claws, Sam mused.
Do you think Mia needs your protection, Mrs. Todd?
I think Mia can handle anything.
She smiled now, thin as a blade.
Absolutely anything.
Sam picked up his coffee.
So do I,
he agreed. Then wandered off in the direction Mia had gone. The bastard! Once she was behind the closed door of her office, Mia let out a splinter of the rage. Even that had books and knick-knacks on her shelves rattling and jumping. That he would have the nerve, the insensitivity, the stupidity, to waltz into her store.
To stand there and smile at her, as if he expected her to shout for joy and jump into his arms, and to look baffled when she hadn't. Bastard. She clenched her fists, and a thin crack snaked across the glass of her window. She'd known the moment he'd walked in, just as she'd known the instant he'd come onto the island. It had washed over her, flooded into her, as she'd sat at her desk completing a stock order. Pain, shock, joy, fury. All so intense, all so immediate, she'd been dizzy from them. One stunning emotion slamming into another, leaving her weak and trembling. And she'd known he was back. 11 years! He'd walked away from her, leaving her hurting and helpless and hopeless. It still shamed her to remember the quivering mass of confusion and grief she'd been for weeks after he'd gone. But she'd rebuilt her life on the ashes of the dreams that Sam had burned beneath her. She'd found her focus and a kind of steady contentment. Now he was back. She could only thank the fates that her foreknowledge had given her time to compose herself. How humiliating it would have been if she'd seen him before she'd had a chance to prepare herself, and how satisfying it had been to see that flicker of surprise and puzzlement cross his face at her cool and casual greeting. She was stronger now, she reminded herself. She was no longer the girl who had laid her heart, bleeding and broken, at his feet. And there were more, many more important things in her life now than a man. Love, she thought, could be such a lie. She had no place and no tolerance for lies. She had her home, her business, her friends. She had her circle again, and that circle had a purpose. That was enough to sustain her. At the knock on the door, she blocked her feelings, her thoughts again, then slid onto the chair behind her desk.
Yes, come in.
She was scanning the data on her monitor when Sam stepped inside. She glanced over absently with just the hint of a frown in her eyes.
Nothing on the menu to tempt you?
I settled for this.
He lifted the coffee, then pried off the top and set it on her desk.
Nell's very loyal.
Loyalty's a necessary quality in a friend, to my mind.
He made some sound of agreement, then sipped the coffee.
She also makes superior coffee.
A necessary quality in a cafe, chef.
She tapped her fingers on the desk in a gesture of restrained impatience.
Sam, I'm sorry. I don't want to be rude. You're more than welcome to enjoy the cafe, the store. But I have work.
He studied her for one long moment, but that slightly annoyed expression on her face didn't waver.
I won't keep you, then. Why don't you just give me the keys and I'll go off and settle in?
Baffled, she shook her head.
Keys?
To the cottage, your cottage.
My cottage? Why on earth would I give you the keys to the yellow cottage?
Because,
delighted to have finally broken through that polite shield, he drew papers out of his pocket.
We have a lease.
He set the papers on her desk, leaning back when she snatched them up to read.
Celtic Circle's one of my companies,
he explained as she scowled at the names.
And Henry Downing's one of my attorneys. He leased the cottage for me.
Her hand wanted to tremble. More, it wanted to strike. Deliberately, she laid it, palm down, on the desk.
Why?
I have attorneys to do all manner of things for me,
Sam said with a shrug.
Added to that, I didn't think you would rent it to me. But I did think, was sure, that once a business deal had been made, you'd keep your end.
She drew in a long breath.
I meant, why do you need the cottage? You have an entire hotel at your disposal.
I don't choose to live in a hotel, nor to live where I work. I want my privacy and my downtime. I won't get either if I stay at the hotel. Would you have rented it to me, Mia, if I hadn't gone through the lawyer?
Her lips curved now sharply.
Of course. But I'd have bumped up the monthly rent considerably.
He laughed, and more on balance than he'd been since that first sight of her, drank more coffee.
A deal's a deal, and maybe it was meant. Since my parents sold our house to Ripley's new husband, I can't set up housekeeping there. Things usually happen the way they're supposed to happen.
Things happen,
was all she said. She opened a drawer, took out a set of keys.
It's small, and it's on the rustic side, but I'm sure you'll make do with it while you're on the island.
She set the keys on the desk on top of his copy of the lease.
I'm sure I will. Why don't you have dinner with me tonight? We can catch up.
No, thank you.
He hadn't meant to ask, not so soon. It irked him that the words had escaped.
Some other time, then.
He rose, pocketed the keys, the lease.
It's good to see you again, Mia.
Before she could evade it, he laid his hand over hers on the desk. Something sparked, visibly. The air sizzled with it.
Ah,
was all he said, and tightened his grip.
Take your hand off me.
She kept her voice low, spoke slowly while looking directly into his eyes.
You have no right to touch me.
It was never about rights with us, and all about need.
Her hand wanted to tremble. Sheer will kept it steady.
There is no us now, and I no longer need you.
It hurt. A bright, swift pain twisted in his heart.
But you do, and I need you. There's more to be considered than old bruised feelings.
Bruised feelings?
She repeated the phrase as if it were a new language.
I see. Be that as it may, you will not touch me without my permission. You don't have it.
We're going to have to talk.
That implies we have something to say to each other.
She allowed some of the anger to surface and coated it with disdain.
Right at this moment, I don't have anything to say to you. I want you to leave. You have the lease, you have the keys, you have the cottage. That was clever of you, Sam. You always were clever, even as a boy. But this is my office and my store.
My island, she nearly said, but bit it back in time.
And I don't have time for you.
When his grip loosened, she slid her hand free. The air cleared.
Let's not spoil your visit with a scene. I hope you'll like the cottage. If you have any problems with it, let me know.
I will. Enjoy it and let you know.
He turned to the door, opened it.
Oh, Mia, this isn't a visit. I'm here to stay.
He saw, with vicious pleasure, her cheeks go pale just before he shut the door. He cursed himself for that and for bungling the first steps. His mood remained foul as he stalked downstairs and out of the store under Lulu's steely stare. He turned away from the docks where he'd parked, away from the cottage where he would live for a while, and headed toward the police station. He could only hope that Zack Todd, now Sheriff Todd, would be in. By God, Sam thought, he'd like one person, one goddamn person, to welcome him home and mean it. If he couldn't count on Zack for that, he was in a very sorry state. He hunched his shoulders against the brisk spring breeze, no longer appreciating it. She'd brushed him off like a fly, like a gnat. Not with a slash of temper, but with irritation. That snap of connection between them meant something. He had to believe that. But if anyone he knew could hold the line against fate, could press her will against it, it was Mia. Stubborn, prideful witch, he thought, then sighed. The fact that she was exactly that had always been part of her appeal for him. Pride and power were hard to resist. Unless he missed his guess, she had more of both now than she'd had at 19. That meant he had his work cut out for him, on a number of levels. He hissed out a breath and shoved open the door to the station house. The man who sat with his feet on the desk and a phone at his ear hadn't changed much. He'd filled out here, fined down there. His hair was still unruly, still sun-streaked brown. His eyes were the same sharp, pure green, and they widened as they studied Sam's face.
Hey, let me get back to you. I'll have the paperwork faxed over by the end of the day. Yeah. Right, I have to go.
Zack swung his feet from desk to floor as he hung up the phone. Then he unfolded himself and stared, grinning, at Sam.
Son of a bitch! It's Mr. New York City! So look who's John Law.
Zack crossed the small office area in three strides on battered high tops and caught Sam in a bear hug. More than relief rippled through Sam, for here was welcome and the uncomplicated affection and bone-deep bond that had sprung from childhood. The years between the boy and the man fell away.
It's good to see you,
he managed.
Right back at you.
Zack eased away, took stock.
pure pleasure flashed in his grin. Well, you didn't get fat and bald from sitting behind a desk.
Sam shot a look at Zack's cluttered work area.
Neither did you, Sheriff. Yeah, so remember who's in charge and keep your nose clean on my island. What the hell are you doing here? Want some coffee? If you're calling what's in that pot coffee, I'll pass, thanks. And, I've got business here. Long-term business.
Zack pursed his lips as he poured muddy coffee into a mug.
The hotel? For one thing. I bought my parents out. It's mine now. Bought them.
Zack shrugged, eased a hip onto the corner of the desk.
My family never did run like yours, Sam said dryly. It's a business, one that my father lost interest in. I haven't.
How are your parents?
Dandy. You just missed them. They came in for Ripley's wedding and stayed nearly a month. I almost thought they'd decided to move back permanently, but then they packed up their Winnebago and headed up to Nova Scotia.
I'm sorry I won't get to see them. I've heard Rip's not the only one who got married.
Yeah? Zack lifted his hand where his wedding ring glinted. I'd hoped you'd make it back for the wedding.
I wish I could have. That was a real regret, one of many.
I'm happy for you, Zack. I mean that.
I know it. You'll be happier when you meet her.
Oh, I met your wife.
Sam's smile thinned.
From the smell of that crap you're drinking, she makes better coffee than you.
Ripley made it.
Whatever. I'm just grateful your wife didn't pour hers over my head.
Why would she?
Oh.
Zack puffed out his cheeks.
Oh, well, then. Mia.
He rubbed a hand over his chin.
Nell and Mia and Ripley. The fact is...
He broke off as the door swung open. Ripley Todd Book, vibrating from the brim of her ball cap to the toes of her scarred boots, glowered at Sam. Her eyes, the same green as her brother's, shot arrows of resentment.
Better late than never, she announced as she started forward. I've been waiting for this for 11 years.
Zack lunged toward her, caught her around the waist as she swung out. She had, he had reason to know, a keen right cross.
Hold on, he ordered. Just hold the hell on. Hasn't mellowed, has she?
Sam commented. He tucked his hands in his pockets. If she was going to plant a fist in his face, he'd just as soon she get it over with.
Not a bit.
Zack hefted her off her feet while she cursed at him. Her cap fell off, and her long, dark hair tumbled over her furious face.
Sam, why don't you give me a few minutes here?
Ripley, cut it out, he ordered. You're wearing a badge, remember?
Then I'll take it off before I punch him.
She blew her hair out of her eyes, and they scorched the air between her and Sam.
He deserves it.
Maybe I do, Sam agreed. But not from you.
Me is too much of a damn lady to bust your chops. I'm not.
He smiled now.
I always liked that about you.
I'm renting the yellow cottage, he told Zack, and watched Ripley's mouth drop open in shock.
Come on by when you have time. We'll have a beer.
He decided the shock was complete when she didn't try to kick him as he walked to the door. He stepped outside again, took another long look at the village. He'd had a welcome from a friend, even if three women had formed a tight circle of resentment against him. For better or for worse, he thought, he was home. 2. The road to hell, Sam decided, was paved with intentions, and they didn't have to be good. He'd intended to stride back into Mia's life, face her fury, her tears, her bitterness. She was entitled to all of those, and he would be the last to deny it. He would have accepted her rage, her curses, her accusations. He'd intended to give her the opportunity to vent every drop of resentment she had harbored for him, and, of course, he'd intended then to sweep them aside and win her over. A done deal, in his calculations, in a matter of hours at best, days at worst. They'd been linked since childhood. What was 11 years compared to a bond of blood and heart and power? But he hadn't intended to face her cool indifference. Oh, she was angry with him, he thought, as he parked in front of the cottage. But overlying the anger was a thick, icy shield. Chipping through that would take more than smiles, explanations, promises, even apologies.
Lulu had blasted him, Nell had slapped at him, and Ripley had bared her teeth. Mia had done none of those things, but her response had leveled him as none of the others had or could. It stung to have her look at him with a kind of studied disdain, particularly since seeing her again had stirred all the memories inside him, churning them with fresh spurts of lust, longing, love. He had loved her, obsessively, outrageously, and that had been the root, or one of the many tangled roots, of the problem. As he turned it over in his mind, he tapped his fingers idly on the steering wheel. He refused to believe she didn't still care for him. There had been too much between them, too much of them, for there to be nothing left. And if there'd been nothing, that spark, that one instant of connection when their hands had touched, wouldn't have happened. He was going to hold on to that, Sam thought, as his hands tightened and released on the wheel. Whatever else came down, he was holding on to that one spark. A determined man could build one hell of a blaze from one good spark. Winning her back, doing what must be done, facing what must be faced would be a challenge. His lips quirked. He'd always enjoyed one. He would have to do more than chip through Mia's ice. He'd have to get past the dragon, and Lulu was no pushover. And he'd have to deal with the women who flanked Mia, Nell Todd with her quiet disapproval, and Ripley with her infamous temper. When a man had to wage a battle against four women, that man had best have a plan, and very thick skin, or he would be ground to dust in a heartbeat. He'd work on it. Sam swung out of the car, rounded back to the trunk. There was time. Not as much as he might have liked under the circumstances, but there was time. He hefted two suitcases out of the trunk, started up the walk, then stopped and took his first real look at what would be his home for the next weeks. Well, it was charming, he realized. Neither the photographs he'd studied nor his memory had done the cottage justice. It had been white once, as he recalled, and a bit run down. The yellow paint warmed it, and the flower beds, just sprouting with spring, cheered it. That would be Mia's doing, he imagined. She'd always had exquisite taste and clear vision. She had always known precisely what she wanted. Another tangled root for him. The cottage was quaint, tiny, and private, on a pretty corner lot that bled into a small wood and was close enough to the water that the rumble of the sea played through the greening trees. It had the advantage of quiet solitude and the convenience of being an easy walk from the village. An excellent investment, Sam thought. Mia would have known that, too. The clever girl, he mused as he continued up the walk, had become a clever woman. He set his suitcases on the stoop and dug out the house keys. The first thing that struck him when he stepped inside was the warmth of welcome, the smooth, open hand of it. "Come in and make this home," the room seemed to say. There were no lingering sensations or energy spurts from previous tenants. That would be Mia's doing as well, he was sure. She'd always been a thorough witch. Leaving his suitcases by the door, he took himself on a quick tour. The living room was sparsely but prettily furnished, and split logs had already been laid in the hearth. The floors gleamed, and thin, lacy curtains framed the windows. A female ambience, he thought, but he could live with that. There were two bedrooms, one cozy, the other, well, he only needed one. The bath, scrubbed and cheery, was also a narrow box designed to give a tall man with long limbs considerable grief. The kitchen at the back of the house would more than do for his needs. He didn't cook, and he didn't intend to begin. He opened the back door to find more flower beds, an herb garden already thriving, and a tiny patch of lawn that slid right into the spring woods. He could hear the sea and the wind and, if he listened carefully, the hum of a car heading to the village. Birdsong and the playful yap of a dog. He was, Sam realized, alone. With the realization, some of the tension that had gathered in his shoulders eased. He hadn't understood just how much he craved solitude. It wasn't a commodity he'd been able to claim in great quantities over the last couple of years, nor was it something he'd actively sought in the day-to-day scheme of things. He'd had goals to achieve and points to prove, and such ambitions didn't allow for the luxury of solitude. He hadn't understood that he needed to find that serenity of aloneness again,
almost as much as he needed to find Mia. Once he had had both, whenever he wanted them, and once he had cast them both aside. Now the island he'd run from so fast as a young man was going to give them back to him. He would have enjoyed walking through the woods or down to the beach, or driving, he thought, to his old house and seeing his bluffs, his cove, the cave where he and Mia... He shook that idea and those memories away. It wasn't the time for sentiment. There were practical matters to be dealt with. Phones, faxes, computers. The little bedroom would have to suit up as a secondary office, though he planned to base his work at the hotel. He needed supplies, and he knew that as soon as he made his way around the village buying them, word of his return would spread like fire through dry kindling. He would see what he would see. Turning from the door, he went back inside to unpack and set his place to rights. Well-meaning friends, Mia thought, were a blessing and a curse. At the moment, two of hers were crammed into her office. "I think you should kick his ass," Ripley announced. "Of course, I thought that 10 years ago." 11, Mia corrected silently. 11 years, but who's counting?
"That would make him too important."
Nell stuck her nose in the air.
"She's better off ignoring him."
"You don't ignore a blood leech," Ripley bared her teeth. "You rip it off and stomp it into a quivering pulp."
"What a pretty image."
At her desk, Mia leaned back, studied her two friends.
"I have no intention of kicking Sam's ass or of ignoring him. He's taken a 6 months' lease on the cottage, which makes me his landlord."
"You could cut off his hot water," Ripley suggested.
Mia's lips twitched.
"How perfectly childish, however satisfying it might be. I've no intention of pulling silly pranks, either. If I did, I'd cut off his water altogether. Why stop it hot?"
"But,"
she continued as Ripley gave a hoot of laughter, "he is my tenant, and that means he's entitled to everything that's spelled out in the lease. It's business and nothing more."
"Why the hell is he renting any place on the Sisters for 6 months?" Ripley wondered.
"Obviously, he's here to take more personal charge of the Magic Inn."
He'd always loved it, Mia mused, or so she'd thought. Yet he'd walked away from it just as he walked away from her.
"We're both adults, both business owners, both islanders, and though it's a small world here, I imagine the two of us can manage to run our enterprises, live our lives, and coexist with a minimum of fuss."
Ripley snorted.
"If you believe that, you're delusional."
"I won't let him into my life again."
Mia's voice took on an edge. "And I won't let my life be upset because he's here. I always knew he'd come back." Before Ripley could speak again, Nell shot her a warning glance.
"You're right, of course. And with the season coming on, you'll both be too busy to get in each other's way. Why don't you come to dinner tonight? I'm trying out a new recipe, and I could use the feedback."
"You'll get that from Zack. No need to pamper me or soothe me, little sister."
"Why don't we all go out and get drunk and bitch about men in general?"
Ripley perked up.
"That's always fun."
"As appealing as that sounds, I'll pass. I have a number of things to do at home. If I can get my work done here..."
"She wants us to clear out," Ripley told Nell.
"I get that,"
Nell sighed. It was hard, she thought, to want so badly to help and not know how.
"All right. But if there's anything you need or want, I know. I'm fine. And I'm going to stay that way."
She scooted them out, then sat. Just sat, with her hands on her lap. It was self-defeating to tell herself she would work, or to pretend she could move through this particular day, as if it were any other day. She was entitled to rage and to weep, to spit at fate and beat her fists on the face of destiny. But she would do none of those things. Those weak and useless things. She would, however, go home. She got to her feet, gathered her purse, and the light jacket she'd brought, and as she passed her window, she saw him. He stepped out of a sleek black Ferrari, his coat a dark swirl around him. He always did like shiny toys, she thought. He'd changed out of his jeans into a dark suit and tamed his hair, though the breeze was already playing with it, as her fingers once had. He carried a briefcase and strode toward the Magic Inn like a man who knew precisely where he was going and what he meant to do. Then he turned, lifting his gaze unerringly to where she stood in the window, his eyes locked on hers, and she felt the jolt, the punch of heat that would once have melted her knees. But this time she stood straight and without a quiver. When enough time had passed for pride, she stepped away from the window and out of his sight. Home soothed her. It always had. Practically, the big, rambling stone house on the cliff was too much for one woman, but it was, she knew, perfect for her. Even when she'd been a child, the house had been more hers than it had been her parents'. She'd never minded the echoes, the occasional drafts, or the sheer volume of time it took to maintain a house of its size and age. Her ancestors had built it, and now it was hers alone. She'd changed little on the inside since the house had come into her care. The furnishings here and there, a few of the colors, some basic modernization of the kitchen and baths. But the feel of the house was as it had always been for her, embracing, warm, waiting. There had been a time when she'd imagined herself raising a family there. God, she'd wanted children, Sam's children. But over the years she had accepted what was and what wasn't, and had made a nest of contentment. At times she thought of the gardens as her children. She had created them, taking the time to plant, to nurture, to discipline, and they brought her joy. And when she needed more than the gentle pleasure they provided, she had the passion and drama of her cliffs, the secrets and shadows of her forests. She had, Mia told herself, all she needed. But tonight she didn't wander out to fuss with her flowers or walk to face the sea from her cliffs. She didn't stroll into her forest. Instead, she went directly upstairs, climbing until she was closed inside her tower room. Here had been refuge and discovery when she was a child. Here she had never felt alone unless alone was what she needed to feel. Here she had learned and had disciplined the beams of her own power. The walls were rounded, the windows tall, narrow, and arched. The late afternoon sun streamed through them in pale gold to pool on the dark, aged wood of the floor. Shelves curved along one wall, and on them were many of the tools of her trade, pots of herbs, jars of crystals, spell books that had belonged to those who'd come before her, and the ones that she'd written herself. An old cabinet held other objects. There was a wand she'd made herself from maple that she had harvested on Samhain when she turned 16, a broom, her best chalice, her oldest athame, and a ball of pale blue crystal, candles and oils and incense, a scrying mirror. All this and more, carefully organized. She gathered what she needed, then slipped out of her dress. She preferred, whenever possible, to work sky-clad. And so she cast the circle, calling on her element, fire, for energy. The candles she lighted with a breath were blue for calm, for wisdom, for protection. She had performed this ritual before, several times in the past decade. Whenever she felt her heart weaken or her purpose waver, she admitted that if she hadn't done so, she would have known Sam was coming back to the sisters before he'd arrived. So the years of relative peace had their price. She would block him again, block her thoughts and feelings from him and his from her. They would not touch each other on any level. "My heart and mind are mine to keep," she began, lighting incense, sprinkling herbs on still water. "When I wake and when I sleep, what once I gave with love and free will, I take back to me and hold calm and still. Then lovers, now strangers without joined destiny. As I will, so mote it be." With her cupped palms lifted, she waited for the cool flow of serenity, the stream of confidence that would indicate her ritual was complete. As she watched, the cup of herb-scattered water began to shiver. Water lapped against the rim in quiet, teasing waves. She fisted her hands, fought back her own temper. Focusing her energy, she punched magic against magic. "My circle is closed to all but me. Your tricks are foolish and bore me. Do not enter what's mine again without invitation." At the flick of her fingers, the lights from the candles streamed up, lancing to the ceiling. Smoke from them billowed, spread, and blanketed the surface of the water. Even then she couldn't find her calm or get a clean grasp of her temper. he would dare test his power against hers, and in her own home? So he hadn't changed, she decided. Samuel Logan had always been an arrogant witch, and his element, she thought, hating herself when the first tear escaped, was water. In her circle, behind the haze of smoke, she lay down and wept, bitterly. The island grapevine spread the news fast. By the next morning, the hot topic of Sam Logan had outdistanced every other tendril of gossip. Conflicting reports had him selling the Magic Inn to mainland developers, expanding it into some fancy resort, firing the staff, or giving everyone a raise. One thing everyone could agree on was that it was very, very interesting that he was renting Mia Devlin's little cottage. There was no consensus on what it meant, only that it was a puzzler. Islanders, hoping to gather more nuggets, found reasons to drop into Cafe Book or stroll into the lobby of the hotel. Nobody had enough gumption to ask Sam or Mia directly, but there was plenty of watching and hoping for some excitement. It had been a long, slow winter.
"Still handsome as sin and twice as deadly," Hester Birmingham confided this information to Gladys Macy as she bagged Gladys's weekly supply of groceries at Island Market. "Strolled in here big as life and twice as bold, and said hello to me like we'd just seen each other a week ago." "What did he buy?" Gladys questioned. "Coffee, milk, dry cereal, whole wheat bread and stick butter, some fruit. We got bananas on special, but he passed them up and paid dear for fresh strawberries. Bought himself some fancy cheese and fancy crackers and some bottled water. Oh, and some orange juice in a carton."
"Not planning on doing any cooking or cleaning for himself from the sound of it."
Confidentially, she leaned closer to Hester. "I ran into Hank from the liquor store. He says Sam Logan breezed in and bought up $500 worth of wine, some beer, and a bottle of single malt scotch."
"$500?"
Hester's voice lowered to a hiss. "You think he picked up a drinking problem in New York?"
"It wasn't the number of bottles, but the price," Gladys hissed back. "Two bottles of French champagne and two of that fancy red wine you know who favors."
"Who?" Gladys rolled her eyes.
"Mia Devlin! For heaven's sake, Hester, who do you think?"
"I heard she kicked him out of the bookstore."
"No such thing. He walked in and out again under his own steam. I know that for a fact, because Lisa Bigelow was in the cafe having lunch with her cousin from Portland when he was there. Lisa ran into my daughter-in-law at the pump and go and told her the whole story."
"Well," Hester liked the first story better, "do you think Mia will put a whammy on him?"
"Hester Birmingham, you know Mia doesn't do whammies. What a thing to say."
Then she laughed.
"But it sure will be interesting seeing what she does do. I think I'll go put these groceries away, then go buy myself a new paperback novel and a cup of coffee."
"You call me if anything develops."
Gladys winked as she rolled her loaded cart away.
"You can take that to the bank."
Sam was well aware that tongues were wagging. He'd have been disappointed if they hadn't. Just as he'd expected to read trepidation, resentment, and puzzlement when he called a morning meeting with all department heads at the hotel. Some of the trepidation eased when it became clear that a mass firing was not on the agenda, and some of the resentment increased when it became clear that Sam intended not only to take an active role in the running of the hotel, but to make some changes as well.
"In season, we run it near capacity. Off-season, however, our occupancy rate drops sharply, often dipping to under 30%.
The sales manager shifted in his seat.
"Business is slow on island in the winter months. Always has been."
"What's always been doesn't apply," Sam said coolly. "The goal for now is to increase the guest rate to 65% off-season within the year. We'll do that by offering more appealing packages to conventions, as well as weekend and weekly getaway packages. I'll have memos regarding my ideas in those areas on your desk by end of week. Next," he continued, flipping through his notes, "a number of the rooms require renovation and redressing. We'll begin next week with the third floor."
He glanced at his reservations manager.
"You'll make the necessary adjustments. Without waiting for acknowledgement, he flipped another page. "We've had a steady decline in our breakfast and lunch business over the last 10 months. Data indicate that Cafe Book is nipping off our usual business in those areas."
"Sir," a brunette cleared her throat, adjusted the dark-framed glasses on her face.
"Yes, I'm sorry, your name?"
"Stella Farley. I'm the restaurant manager. If I can speak frankly, Mr. Logan, we're never going to be able to compete with the cafe and Nell Todd. If I could..."
She broke off when he lifted a finger. "I don't care for the word never."
She took a deep breath. "I'm sorry, but I've been here the last 10 months and you haven't."
There was a deep silence, like a unified holding of breath. After a beat, Sam nodded. "Point taken. And just what have you learned in the last 10 months, Ms. Farley?"
"That if we want to bring back business and generate more of it during the breakfast and lunch hours, we should counter-program. The cafe offers casual and casual gourmet, a relaxed atmosphere and, well, fabulous food. We need to offer an alternative, elegance, formality, romance, an upscale atmosphere for a business meal or a special date. I sent your father a report and a proposal last fall, but..."
"You're not dealing with my father now."
It was said so flatly, so smoothly, none of the resentment showed.
"Get a copy on my desk by this afternoon."
"Yes, sir." He paused.
"If anyone else has run ideas or proposals by my father over the last year, they should copy me by end of week. I want to make it clear that I own this hotel now. Own and run. While my word will be final, I expect input from my department heads. I'll have memos to all of you over the next several days, and expect your responses to same within 48 hours of receipt. Thank you."
He watched them file out and heard the mumbling start before the door was closed. One woman remained behind in her seat, another brunette. She wore a simple navy suit and practical pumps. She was nearing 60. Had worked at the inn for more than 40 years. She slipped off her glasses, lowered her steno pad, and folded her hands. "Will that be all, Mr. Logan?"
Sam lifted an eyebrow. "You used to call me Sam."
"You didn't used to be my boss."
"Mrs. Farley."
His eyes cleared.
"Was that your daughter, Stella?"
"Jesus." "Don't swear in the office."
"Sorry, it just didn't connect." "Congratulations," he added. "She was the only one with guts or brains enough to say anything worthwhile."
"I raised her to stand up for herself." "They're scared of you," she told him.
Boss or not, she decided, she'd known him since he was a baby. If her daughter could speak her mind, so could she.
Most of the people who were in this room haven't ever so much as seen a Logan.